Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined, as always, by Tyler Rucker. But, Rucker, we're not alone this episode. We got a very special guest.
Very, very special one. I've been very excited for this. Returning guest, friend of the program. That's what we're really proud about. So I'm excited for this one, Metcalf.
Yeah, like you said, friend of the program, previously on with Maxwell during one of his Draft Sickos episodes. But one of the best in the business, Kristen Peek from Yahoo Sports. Kristen, thank you so much for taking so much time in such a crazy time.
I know. I am so happy to be here. Like I said, you know, this is officially draft season now that we see the writing on the wall for the Celtics probably winning this one. I don't know. But do you guys think the Mavs can win one game? I know we're going to talk draft, but like, do you think otherwise then it's more pressure on us to produce more draft content? People are just going to be playing catch up before the draft.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to go so fast, the finals. And then I realized the same thing today. I was like, oh, whoa, that means way more content we have to be pumping out. Usually it kind of gives us like the, oh, it's almost done. It's almost right. Time for the draft. So I keep waiting for Dallas to win one. I feel like after last game and Windhorse's little rant about Luka, if he doesn't have a big game, I don't know. So I still feel like they're going to steal one. I'm not sure. What about you, Metcalf? You think so?
I think it's done. I think that I think Dallas is cooked. I would be shocked if it went five. Boston has played pretty awful, and they're still winning these games pretty easily. So it's like I think it's over.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's get into draft talk. We don't need to talk about the five. People listen to other podcasts for. I'm sorry, I even brought it up. Yes.
No, Rucker's a Celtics fan, and I haven't had the courage to text him during any of these games yet. So I haven't gotten any of his thoughts.
I'm still scarred by the Warriors series, so I'm like, I can't get too ahead of myself. I'm like, but just win it, and everyone's like, it's done. I'm like, no, it's not done until they win four games. So no, I feel good. But I get it. Kristen's right. It's like, okay, enough's enough. Enough of the gooey stuff. Let's talk about the draft.
Well, it's such a fun draft, too.
Yeah.
Really easy one to give all thoughts about. You make you sleep well at night, this draft class.
Well, you mentioned fun. And, you know, Kristen, when we just look at the top of this draft and, like, especially the top 10. Can you remember a draft where there's been this much uncertainty, let alone with like the top two picks, but the top 10 picks?
No, not since I've been in the draft space, and it's been about 10 years. So, I mean, maybe 2013, you know, when we saw Giannis drop to 15, that was kind of like a who's going where. But I remember talking to a scout in September, and he said, and we were watching the G League Ignite play the Perth Wildcats, and everybody's, you know, feeling coming there, we're like, okay, this is a benchmark. By January, it will become very clear who the best prospect in this class is. We just have to wait it out. The college season needs to start. They need to get some games under them. That never happened. The production output of the players this year was, I think, a disappointment in terms of what some of these players' potential upside is as NBA players. I don't know if that has to do with the fact that college basketball is getting better. The players are getting older thanks to NIL, thanks to the fifth-year senior COVID year that we're seeing. And so it's getting more competitive. The pace is getting harder and the physicality is getting harder for these freshmen, these one-and-done freshmen to come in and adjust right away. But just that on top of the fact that the European players are no longer scared of America and coming and playing in the NBA because they've seen what their peers can do. You know, you got now young players that have come up playing alongside Victor Wembanyama, and now they've seen his success his rookie year. That gives them the confidence to come in, you know, just and make an impact right away.
So for me personally, my board from, you know, October or July from last year, it's changed so much where, you know, we talk about how many moving parts there are. When I just even think about who's been number one at like the top of my individual board, there might be like 15 different names where it's been absolutely insane from Justin Edwards at the start of the year being, I was like, oh, he looks like a prototypical number one. And even guys like Garway Dual being near top 10. And, you know, then you look at Zachary Risacher and Alex Saar and Stephen Castle, and the list goes on and on and on. His your board or your kind of evaluation this year kind of experienced that same type of chaos where you're just cycling through names and basically whoever you see at the top of a list, you're like, okay, I kind of get it.
Absolutely. I mean, I literally at the combine, I was talking to an executive and he said, we're looking at mock drafts across the board and our board, none of our boards are anywhere near matching what the projections are, which I think is going to make a very fun draft in the sense where we're going to get a lot of those surprises. Now, that doesn't bode well for the players that have been projected top 10 picks this entire year. And now 2 weeks before the draft, a week before the draft, you start hearing about players that are on the rise, which means if there's players rising, there's going to be those players that fall, similar to what we saw with Cam Whitmore last year. And also, I mean, I would even say Keyonte George fell a little bit just in terms of who other teams preferred over the quote unquote, like projected prospects that had been at the top all year.
Kristen, I know, you know, for outsiders, people that weren't focusing all year on evaluating this class, everyone was like, oh, it's a bad class. You know, it's not going to be that good. And then, you know, myself personally, I was like, there's some intriguing depth that I'm getting excited about. And it feels like now everyone's starting to get excited about this class because of the chaos, because of the uncertainty. I know, you know, listening to Kevin O'Connor on the Ringer show, he was saying there's a lot of executives around the league that are actually intrigued with the depth. Like, not if you're picking early, you're a little concerned, but there's still some rotation players around. Is that kind of the vibe you think that there's still some teams that are like, there's players in this class that can help us for sure. There's a lot of intriguing depth. Or is it just everyone's scared? Everyone's just like, we have no idea what's going to happen.
I think for teams, when you start hearing, oh, it's a weak draft, I don't necessarily think they're talking about depth or the role players that are kind of going to come out of this draft. Because let's be honest, there's 60, 58 players, whatever it is, that are going to be drafted every single year. I think where the fall off comes is just that bona fide franchise changing star power player that is going to get a fan base really excited about being a number one pick, number two pick, whatever it is. You know, like, I don't think when I was in the draft lottery room when the Atlanta Hawks won the draft lottery for the first time in franchise history, and it was significantly different than the year before when the buzz was just completely crazy with Victor Wembanyama, because you knew that that player was changing your franchise. I don't know going into this draft that there is any certainty across the board that you're going to definitely, like, bona fide swing for the fences, home run, you know you're going to find a bona fide star. So it's intriguing for a lot of teams because now they really have to use their scouting department. They really have to go through their roster. They really have to look at their depth and they have to look at the players across the board and say, okay, no, he is going to fit perfect. He's going to be great in rotation. It's not who are we drafting to build around. It's more who can we draft to play a role and contribute to try to be a championship caliber team.
I think that's kind of a really interesting way to view the top of this draft too, because typically when we talk about top three picks, it's always, all right, who is the best player there? And it doesn't matter about fit. It doesn't matter about current roster. But do you think the kind of fit is really going to determine who goes number one and two a lot more than it has in previous years? And if so, how do you kind of think that that's going to steer the thinking come draft night?
It'll be really interesting what Atlanta Hawks decide to do when they're on the clock. You know, I know that they have to be taking a lot of phone calls, looking at different scenarios. Are we going to keep that pick? Are we going to trade? Who wants the number one pick? Who's looking for Alex Saar, Zachary Richichet? Or are they just going to be super bold and just take whoever they want? You know, it's going to be so interesting. I don't know who they want. I think the easiest pick is Richichet, just in terms of what he did to close out the season over in France, playing for JL Borg in the LNB Pro A. And, you know, like I said, this international talent, they're coming in now to the league very fearless. And I think that bodes well, you know, for Alex Saar and Bo Zachary Richichet, who are projected at the top. But the conversations that have to be going on behind closed doors from draft lottery night to the draft, like, I don't envy the Hawks for having this pick and making this decision, because they're evident, like there is going to be a guy in this draft. We just have no idea where it is yet.
So if you were running the Hawks on draft night, and it's up to you, you're on the clock, you're making the final call here. It sounds like Ricochet would be the name that you would be submitting. And why?
If I am keeping the pick, to be completely honest, I'm not keeping it. I'm finding someone who is just like, we want Ricochet. This is who we want. Okay, let's talk. Where are you picking? What can you give us? Let's negotiate. That's what I'm doing if the Hawks. But if I am picking, then I am going to take Ricochet just because, like I said, I think his upside projects higher than what Alex Saar's ceiling is. I think in terms of what we're seeing, particularly in the playoffs this year, and what Oklahoma City has built successfully in the last three seasons. I mean, just think of that. Like they were in complete rebuild mode 3 seasons ago. They started their rebuild the same time as the Detroit Pistons, and look where the Pistons are at. So when you see what Sam Presti is doing and he's targeting, you know, 2 or 3 playmakers, and then what is he doing? He's drafting a unicorn center, and then he's just getting a bunch of 6'7", 6'8", long defensive versatility. You don't know what's going to happen on the wing. They're playing fast. They're very good in terms of passing, quick decision-making. And so you're seeing teams that are watching that and they're like, oh, this is working. Maybe we should start looking at guys like this too.
It's been so funny to kind of monitor the buzz at one, because, you know, going back to the Paolo Banchero draft, I feel like we were all like, oh, it's going to be Jabari Smith. And then all of a sudden the night of the draft, we get the Woj teasing the pick early and we're like, wait, what? This is going to happen? So I feel like that's why this year is so exciting, because of the uncertainty, but it's going to be fantastic television because we just have no idea where players are going to go. Like Zach Edey, I think I could see him going anywhere. Just a lot of curveballs. Like we say it every year, like, oh, there's going to be a lot of trades. There's going to be a lot. Do you think this is the year where we're just fireworks? Everyone get on your couch and enjoy the ride because it's going to be crazy. Or are we just going to be a little bit like, oh, there might be some curveballs, but I feel like this is a year where it could get nuts.
I think every year I get to this point and you hear all the rumors and all the smoke and I'm like, this is the year that it's just going to be trades, trades, trades. You get a trade. And then usually what ends up happening is the draft is completely chalk with a couple of flips or swaps here and there. And it's nothing overly exciting, you know? So I don't know, because of the uncertainty, I don't know if teams are just going to be like, nope. Okay. We'll hear what you want to take, but like, we're not entertaining anything outside the realm of a pick next year and, you know, whatever, one of your players. I don't know. I'm so far into like the prospect analysis when it comes to the trades and what's happening draft night. That's why we have Jake Fisher. Cause I'm like, yes. I don't know what's happening. Like just let me focus on the players I've known since they were 15 years old. All right. This is graduation night, I guess a 2-night graduation now, but yeah, it'll be interesting. But I hope there is a lot of chaos that would really spice things up.
For entertainment's sake, I certainly hope there is, but it always feels like this speculation constantly gets overblown. And, you know, like when Minnesota had the number one pick, you know, all the talk was with Anthony Edwards was, oh, they're looking to move out. They're trying to get out of it. And
right.
All these teams always value the number one pick as a lot, because it should be, because they have the chance to take what could be the best player. But then we also see so much stuff of, oh, could the Spurs trade 4 and 8 to move up? But it's like, do the Spurs ever really move around that much on draft night? And why not just take 2 top 10 guys to build around Victor? And why would they overpay to move up when they could get 2 of their guys staying put? And, you know, Memphis moving up with Houston, and does Houston really want to help another non-Western Conference playoff team get better and get into the playoffs? Like they're trying to, I don't know, just a lot of the speculation right now just feels like time filler.
Yeah. Well, that's all teams do. You know, it's we're working the phones. I'm talking to agents. I'm talking to different teams. What are you hearing? And it's up to the teams to decide what they want to put out there. So when you're hearing different things about this player rising, this player is, or this team really is looking at, you know, so-and-so or whatever, then like today, for instance, when I was told on a TV hit that I was doing for Stadium, when they said, oh, well, there's rumors swirling that Zach Edey will is the Bulls want are interested in Zach Edey at 11. And I'm like, great. I'm sure that was something that was put out there purposely, you know? And so we're seeing all this. We're 2 weeks out of the draft. It's just going to get worse. We're going to keep seeing all the smoke. And it's up to us to kind of decipher through it and figure out which one's fact, which one's fiction, who's doing this to protect this person's draft stock, who's not. You know, it's a game. It's a game of chess. And that's what makes it so fun.
My favorite is whenever someone throws out a rumor of what OKC is trying to do too. Like, yeah. Oh, OKC is really interested. It's like, they're clearly not, because nothing ever comes out of.
They're a steel trap. When there was like a buzz about like, oh, they might've promised Ron Holmes. I was like, there's no way they're leaking a promise this early. You never get
OKC. Yeah,
I was like that means he's off the list. Like, it's just, when I heard that, I was like, OKC is a steel trap. You can't get anything out of there. So I hear you guys.
I know. I'm always intrigued. I love that the Thunder have so many draft picks, because I'm always, always interested to see what sort of building block that they're going to continue to add, you know, to their team. And speaking of OKC, like, I think it's going to be very telling that if Cody Williams is there at 12 and they decide to pass on him, that's going to be the tall tale point. You know, because you got to look at OKC. They have the best intel gatherers, background gatherers, I think, in the NBA. Sam Presti obviously knows what he wants to build to become a powerhouse in the West. So for them to not take the brother of who's going to be a max contract player would be very telling at 12.
And, just to kind of stay on the Thunder for a minute, just because they're so intriguing. Whereas like last year when they took Cason Wallace, it surprised a lot of people because it's, why would they take another guard? And it's because he's smart and does a whole lot of stuff at a really high level. So when you kind of look at the Thunder this year, and a lot of people, ourselves included, have mocked other centers there as just, you know, more so as a backup, not necessarily to play with Chet, but to just provide depth or more toolsy wings. What, obviously, we just said that they don't let anything leak, but what do you just kind of think that they would or should do on draft night?
I think they're going to take a player that's nowhere near the lottery right now and just, you know, take whoever they want to fit their system, not necessarily who's best available on the draft board, who's left. I think they're going to take, someone where we're like, who, what they're taking, who, like, that's, I think it's going to be one of those drafts where they're holding their cards so completely close that nobody's going to see it coming.
It feels that way this year. It feels like a lot of teams are going to just be like, consensus is right out the board. We like our guy. We don't care about the upside swings. He's going to work with us. That makes a lot of sense. That's why I'm so excited for this year, because I feel like it's just going to be like, oh, older players that might have a higher floor but not the biggest ceiling, like, they're going to potentially go earlier. I wanted to stick with Cody for a second, because you were a big fan of his, like, throughout the year. I was too. I was right there on that island with you. I'm so intrigued to see where he goes. I think OKC would be so much fun. If he's just on the board when they're picking, I feel like it's going to be great TV. But Is there a way, like, do you see, is there good buzz with Cody? Like, I feel like he's such an intriguing, high talent, upside pick in this draft. Is there kind of buzz where he could be going earlier? Is it just one of those names that we're just throwing in a mix where we're like, someone's going to go down the board and maybe we look back and he's a higher redraft guy? But I'm just so fascinated about Cody's stock, because I think there's a lot of good stuff from his freshman year at Colorado.
The thing that about we all have to remember about Cody is that he is much younger than his brother when his brother was entering the NBA and went number 12 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. But also looking that, a lot of people think that Cody is farther along in terms of his development than when Jalen was at his same age. Cody has always been a slow burn prospect. He was a late riser in high school. We didn't really see him get that comfortable at Colorado. He was dealing with a facial fracture. He was just trying to figure out, where in the perimeter he was going to play when it just became very obvious that KJ Simpson and Tristan Da Silva, with their size and experience, were going to run the show. And so I think it's going to help him down the road, learning to be that supporting player, that, you know, supporting cast on a team. But in terms of his draft stock, I have no idea. Like, if he's just going in for one-on-zero workouts, I don't think that's what's going to be able to showcase his best ability. He's a very, very smart person, very, very smart player, more of a five-on-five, three-on-three PNR action. So if he is because he is a lottery pick, only doing one-on-zero workouts, I think he could slide. And because you got all the decision makers there in the gym, and you're basically drafting a draft and stash player that's going to need development. And when you see what else is on the board in that 10, 12, 15 range, they might want someone that's a little more polished.
He's so interesting. I've just really struggled with him all year because right around the turn of the year, January, February, he was looking like a top five pick because he was healthy. And right. We saw the feel, we saw the decision-making and the aggressiveness, and then ankle injury, facial fracture, and it just, all of it took a couple steps back, and he kind of went back into his shell, almost like we saw back at Hoop Summit and at the start of the year. So it's been really frustrating with him. If you had to guess, kind of range with him, end of lottery, would you be surprised if he fell out of lottery?
You're really putting her on the spot. You're like, just give me names.
We got two weeks. None of this really matters.
9. I'll give him 9. I'll go 9 to 15.
Yeah,
it's a good range. There's a lot of teams there I'm hoping he goes to. I'm right there with Metcalf. I've watched his film in the beginning of the year, like his Colorado State game. He just does some stuff where you're like, whoa, Cody, I was not ready for you to be this, you know. And I think you bring up a great point about, you know, Jalen's at Santa Clara. Like his junior year was fantastic, but he was also a junior. Like, he took a while to get to that point. So what Cody's doing so raw and at his freshman year, I was just stunned. Like, Me and Metcalf talked at the beginning of the year. I was like, I don't know if he's going to be a one and done, but he might be the biggest breakout candidate ever for his sophomore year. And then you're like, whoa, he might be a top five pick. So he's just one of the curveballs in this class I'm really excited about, because I think there's so much talent to unlock.
Yeah, he's someone, I mean, we see what Jaden McDaniels has been able to do and accomplish in Minnesota. It didn't happen overnight. I think we're going to see the same sort of developmental steps from Cody that we saw with Jaden. Early playing time because of what he can do defensively, and then working to get more strength, be more physical, and get more comfortable with his shot creation off the dribble.
And, you know, I do think he could really be one of these guys who benefits a ton simply by falling a couple spots and having some of that pressure taken off of him, of where if he was a top five pick and he is still pretty raw and needs to develop a ton physically still, that's, people expect immediate results from top five picks, but if he's going 9, 10, 11, you know, back end of the lottery, then it's like, all right, now we can kind of slow play this a little bit, you know, put you in positions to succeed slowly, and then kind of build from there and build that confidence. And he's really one of these players in this draft where once that confidence kind of clicks with him, he just turns into a completely different player. But when it's not there, he just kind of, he feels like he's a little shy and a little more introverted, which is fine. But once that confidence gets going and once it can really get built up, that's where you start to unlock some really fun stuff with him.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of this draft. And especially when you're looking at production output immediately, we're not going to see that same number than we saw from this draft class, the year before, Cade Cunningham's class. I mean, we've been spoiled with rookies, and we're just going to have to be patient with the development with some of these guys.
Well, someone else that you recently had falling a little bit in your most recent mock draft over at Yahoo Sports was Nikola Topic dropping to 11. How much of that was knee injury? How much of that was just personal evaluation, buzz? Where are you at with Nikola?
All of it is because of his knee injury. And when you're looking at players in the top five, they don't have necessarily the patience or room to be patient to wait a year to see what sort of player he's going to be. I think they're looking as a win now mentality, except maybe for the Spurs. I could see the Spurs, you know, taking him at 8 and just kind of, you know, letting him learn the system, watch a lot of film, get everything right. Kind of like what we saw from Chet in his year off at OKC, you know, they're in the rebuild. But I think with Nikola, you know, when you start looking at that 8, 9, 10, the Jazz still have future picks in the 2025, 2026 class. And there's a lot of talent. You guys know this, and those two classes coming up. So Topic would be an okay pick, I think, for the Jazz, just in terms of they already have Colin Sexton. They already have a budding, you know, franchise guard and Keontae George. They have the pieces, so they have the patience to let him rehab and go through his surgery and become this, you know, Serbian Josh Giddey that we all saw in the beginning of the year. And another thing that really surprised me is even coming off the injury and when he was still electing to play up. And you don't see that a lot in the Serbian leagues when they have their, you know, kind of sister team. And if you are not ready and if you're not going to be that guy, a guy on the team, they're not going to play you. And so the fact that he still logged minutes, even after not being on the floor for four months or 3 months or whatever it is, shows a lot of confidence in who he is as a player. And I think that's going to translate and help him. I just don't know if a team within the top 5 is going, or even top 6, are going to take a swing on him.
No, I love that point, because that really surprised me too when he came back from injury and he immediately kind of got as many minutes as he did. And a lot of them were with some of the starters. And he was put in more of an off-ball role too, which we hadn't seen from him all season. Which I thought was fascinating in terms of who he could be as a player.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you look at what he did in the beginning of the year and you're like, okay, in order to be productive, he has to have the ball in his hands. He has to. And then towards the end of the season, when you start seeing him play off the ball, you're like, wait a second. Wait, okay, maybe there's two sides to this coin that we haven't seen yet. You know, so the injury, I mean, that's so sad. I you guys saw the video when you have to be helped off the court like that. Oh. And then they claimed a knee sprain. I was like, oh, come on.
Like, no, it's not.
Yeah. And now that, you know, because of the CBA rules and every player has to go through measurements, has to go through medicals, there's no more hiding. You can't hide this information. So it was going to come out eventually. So I wish him the best. And I know a team is probably thinking, listen, if we're patient with him and we wait a year for him to recovery, we could be getting value of at 11, 12, whatever. And he would have been a year later, a top 3, top 4 pick.
He's become the most interesting player right now for me, because I'm just trying to figure out like who's going to slip a little bit. And I'm like you guys, when I saw him getting carried off, I was like, I know Serbians are tough. If they're that banged up, you got to carry them off the court. It's not a knee sprain, but I'm the Spurs at 8, I keep looking at. And if you get past that, I'm like, oh gosh, things could get really interesting if he gets past Utah. Is there another name, you know, Kristen, that you're eyeing personally where you're just like, you could either go early or maybe you're slipping a little bit? Because I just feel every year we see one name falls that we're like, what's going on? But I feel like this year there could be multiple names where we're like, wow, like they fell a little bit, but they might have ended up in a great spot.
I think the two names that I'm hearing the most right now is Ron Holland and Rob Dillingham, just in terms of, Rob, we don't know anything about him. He didn't go through agility, didn't go through testing, didn't go through his pro day. He did measure, came in at 6'1½" and 164 pounds, which isn't great. Didn't go through his pro day at Clutch, citing a sore ankle. And this is a player who has spent his entire career never, ever ducking competition. So I don't know if they're doing it to hide him a little bit and hope that, you know, he's not exposed in this pre-draft process, or he might have a promise and they're just like, you don't need to talk or do anything. We're going to take you at 8 to San Antonio so we can get, you know, Wimby and Rob Dilly and Wimby in the same group. But one thing I will say about Rob, and I feel like I've kind of been knocking him a little bit because we don't know anything about him and what he's doing in the pre-draft process, because of his weight and just the lack of defensive versatility in the backcourt, being able to guard multiple positions on the perimeter, I think he's going to take that, internalize it, and really come out strong and show and prove a lot of people wrong. He's done it every stage of his career. Coming in this year at Kentucky, the biggest knock on his game was, oh, I don't know. I don't know if he can create separation off the dribble for a three-point shot. He was fine doing that, you know? And when you look at that class coming in with Kentucky, Rob almost looked like he was going to be a disaster playing within Calipari's system. And the way Calipari let him play freely, I think the way Rob plays and that the pace he plays is going to cater better to the NBA. But I still think he might fall.
Best transition, right? But I think that's interesting because that seems like the buzz lately. And I think that's part of the whole pre-draft process people sometimes forget is like, there is a lot of maneuvering. There is a lot of strategy. Like you said earlier, with like it is a game of chess. Like agents are trying to potentially drive their clients to a certain place, and not every team can get every player in. So you kind of got to be strategic. So I think hearing the buzz about Rob, about like, oh, maybe there's some people behind the scenes that are pulling strings. I feel like he's the interesting one. I know you brought up Holland as a potential like name that can slide. Is it just something where teams are kind of evaluating and looking at the whole G League season? Is it workouts? Is it something related? Because I still feel like he's the one name too, like Topic, where it's just a really high upside piece if you can be patient.
The thing with Ron and you know, teams love what he does defensively. He averaged 2.5 steals in the G League playing for the Ignite, who were horrible. You know, but it's almost like, what can he do off ball? They don't know what he can do off ball. He needs the ball in his hands. He's a high volume scorer. And I feel like we need to throw out the G League Ignite season because it was so lopsided. It just turned into this like mushy pickup ball where it was like the grown men beating up on the high school kids, because that's what it felt like at games sometimes.
Yeah.
But then when you look back at high school and you want to see that growth in terms of his three-point shot, and just shot selection. And there hasn't been that steady growth in those areas that are most concerning for NBA teams. So when you're comparing Ron to different, maybe upside guys that have that established jumper, they're going to, I think, favor someone that can be slid into the perimeter right away and not necessarily have to be someone that has the hand that has their ball in their hands and needs to put it on the ground in order to make plays and be productive.
Yeah, and excuse me. You mentioned that how much of a mess that Ignite team was this year, and I think that Holland and Bouzelis both were hurt a lot by the fact that they had to do so much creation for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's I don't think that's who they are as players, at least not right now. Maybe long term they get there, but currently I don't think that's where they're at. How much do you think just not having a kind of floor general like those Ignite teams have had in the past, how much do you think that kind of hurt Holland and Bouzelis in the grand scheme of things, either in terms of their development or just kind of their perception across the league right now?
I mean, we'll never know, right? It was the perfect storm there. I think it definitely hurt them. It hurt both of them, just in the sense that there was so much hype around this G League Ignite team coming in. And slowly as the season progressed, I mean, you're seeing them get beat up so badly in the G League. And so when teams are seeing that, they're like, okay, so we're going to take these players who can't even compete with our B level team. And you have to understand that they are 18, 19 and playing up against grown men. And there is that area of grace. But again, are you going to take a swing on someone like that, where you've seen almost like what the bad side of it? And you want to, you're just drafting them in hopes that they will turn it around and be the player that they've kind of been like, oh, he's an upside guy. Well, how many years can you be an upside guy before you start actually producing?
And kind of with Holland specifically, do you think he could be one of these guys? We kind of saw it with the Rockets this last year with Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore, where they were put in a little bit more of a different role than what we saw them in their pre-draft year, and things were really simplified for them, and they were allowed to play to their strengths, really utilize their motor, their athleticism. If we see Haaland immediately kind of put more into that off-ball role and have the responsibilities just kind of taken away from him and to let him go out there and cause chaos and really wreak havoc on the defensive end and get out in transition and just have his game kind of simplified, do you think that he could really surprise people in his rookie year with some of the production that he could produce or could get to?
I think so. Ron, the one thing I'll say about Ron is he competes, and he competes at a high level. And so if he's going into a situation, especially if he falls, it's kind of like same with Rob Dillingham, and he feels like he's got a little chip on his shoulder. We are going to get the best version of Ron Haaland. I guarantee it. So I honestly think, you know, if he's going through this and he's feeling slighted or he's feeling, you know, undervalued, that's probably the best case scenario for whatever team is going to take him, because they're going to get a better version of him because he's going to come in with something to prove. And when you have a competitor like that with their back against the wall and they want to prove to the X amount of players that were drafted in front of them, they want to prove to the teams that overlooked them, then that's a great scenario for you. But I just don't know where his range is and where he eventually is going to, you know, settle on draft night. I think it could go as high as 7 to Portland or as low as, you know, 20.
That's crazy. It's just, I feel like that's going to be so many names this year too. And it's crazy because I've been high on Ron as like a connecting piece all year. I felt like him playing with the Ignite, it was going to be like tough being like, okay, he's not going to be this guy at the NBA level where you're just giving him the ball all the time and say, do everything. But I feel like if he could buy into being that piece alongside like a young talent, I feel like Ron could be really dangerous. So man, it's just crazy with the range.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? I will say this, and I will say this because I was just at the Jazz facility today doing a podcast there, and it was making me think about Keyonte George. And I think the best thing that Key did was he came in to the Jazz and he wasn't the, I have to score right away. He was like averaging 6 assists per game. And I've never seen him as the facilitator like that. And what he said to me was, he's like, I studied so much film and I knew I don't have to be the guy right away. How can I get the ball to all of the players that can score? And so I thought that showed maturity and showed growth in Keyonte. And I hope to see that, you know, across the board in this draft. I think everyone should probably like pull Key aside and be like, dude, you were first team all rookie. You were the 16th pick. Like what did you change mentally, your mentality wise to be so successful?
Yeah. I love that.
He was so good. He was so good. Go ahead.
Keyonte.
Yeah. He was fantastic last year. I loved watching him. It's awesome. It's awesome when players or prospects like that kind of buy into being like, okay, how can I help early instead of being like, I got to score 20. Feel like Keyonte coming from Baylor, his body transformation and just his playmaking, like he was a joy to watch as a rookie. So yeah, go ahead, Metcalf. Sorry. I just was like,
no, you're
in
good.
Deep thought about, yeah, that was a really fun Keyonte year. I can't wait for this year.
Well, on the flip side of, you know, guys potentially falling or having huge ranges, it is workout season. So some of the names that we kind of keep hearing who are killing it are a couple older guys like Tristan Da Silva, Devin Carter, Baylor Shireman. Is there anyone during this kind of period that you've heard is really just having an awesome kind of pre-draft process?
Oh, that is a great question. Devin Carter, for sure. I hear he's just being a menace and killing workouts. He'd be a fun pick, I think, to Memphis. Just with, you know, his dad being there, like being the secondary unit, that would be fun. Enrique Freeman is kind of very intriguing.
Wow. Love that.
I mean, he's good. Someone like people are they're not, they shouldn't be shocked if you hear him on the first night, if you hear his name in the first night.
We love that. We've been talking about him a lot. We were like, this kid can play. Like, so that's a good one. I like that.
Yes. Enrique Freeman, Cam Christie is another one. Even Justin Edwards, kind of looking at that back half of the first round and looking at Justin Edwards and what the Nuggets did taking Peyton Watson and how productive he's been. I was really happy to see Justin play in the 5-on-5 scrimmages at the combine and kind of prove himself a little bit instead of just ducking and hiding. By the way, everybody played both days. I was so happy to see that. I was like, this is incredible, because we always see the guys that play the first day, they've done enough to get a promise or whatever, and then they sit out. But I think in this draft especially, it's like, no, you can really help yourself if you play both days. So, of course, you know, we all hear the promises about Daron Holmes and Baylor Shireman. Tyler Smith is another one that came up that, oh, he has a promise. I'm almost certain Johnny Furphy has a promise because he turned down a massive lucrative NIL deal to go back to Kansas to stay in this draft. So those are just like like the little rumors that we start to hear leading up to the draft week.
My favorite is when we end up getting, like, if you actually compile all the tweets and, you know, quote unquote reports about who has promises, and then you get like 80 guys who have promises. It's like,
I know. I know.
And I think, out here.
I think what teams do, and I think that this is what agents and players distinguish and interpret as promise, is that teams will say, wow, we really loved what you did in this workout. We really love what you did at the season. We're going to highly consider you if you're still sitting there at insert whatever draft pick.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh my God, they love me. They're going to, they said they'd take me at whatever, but that's probably not what's happening. I don't know.
Nope. That is a very loose contract that players and agents should know better. But you kind of mentioned Cam Christie in there. And when the withdrawal deadline came and went and he stayed in, he was one of the biggest surprises for me personally, because I got to see him in person up here in Minnesota a couple times, and I was really intrigued with him. I thought he was going to be a big time sophomore breakout. The jumper is really sweet. He kind of just improved across the board as the season went on, but I just didn't think he was physically ready. When that kind of deadline came and went and he stayed in the draft, were you surprised? And has there kind of been anything specific that you've been hearing about his pre-draft process?
With Cam, I was surprised, just like you. But what we have to remember is the same film that you and I are watching and the progressions and the little glimpses we're seeing throughout the season, that you're getting teams that are seeing that and you're like, whoa, okay, if he did that in a span of however many games, what can he do? How can we mold him within our system? And how much better can he be if, you know? And so you start playing those scenarios. And just like we said, this is a draft full of best fits. So if there is a team that is looking for, you know, long wing, versatile, that can shoot, I mean, I feel like there's so many of those here in the draft. But you're right, he does need to get stronger. He does need to work on his physicality, but so did his brother. Like, those were the knocks for his brother, Max, who went in the second round to the Lakers. So I don't know. He's definitely intriguing. I think, you know, he's that late first round, early second round that teams are probably looking at.
When you kind of just look at the consensus, or, you know, what you're hearing from teams, and then compare it to, you know, your individual rankings in a vacuum, is there anyone that you're kind of higher on that you just don't understand what people are missing? And you're like, come on, people, like, I begging you to buy in on this guy. Is there anyone like that for you in this draft?
There's two players, and I'm not begging anyone to buy in, because I know the holes in both players' games, but I am much higher on AJ Johnson than I think anybody is. We've talked about, I know I've talked
Same.
To you.
Let's go.
You can come on the pod anytime you want.
I'm sorry, but when you look at what he possesses, he's a 6'6 combo guard. He kind of showed different sort of pockets to his game in the 5-on-5 scrimmage, where the first day it was his shooting and shooting off the dribble and what he could do there. And then the second day was his playmaking. He had 6 or 7 assists, made Bronny James look very good. And he had the dunk of the combine. And he's so young. He's still so raw. I always want to feed him like 10 cheeseburgers every time I see him because I just want him to like bulk up a little. But you also have to remember that AJ has been around and working out with Jalen Green, who was the number 2 pick to the Rockets, since he was in 8th grade. He has very similar mannerisms in his game. A lot of people think that the two of them are brothers. They're not even related, even though they kind of look similar and they're always together. They have the same trainer. But AJ is someone that like I have been high on all season. I went to Australia to see him. They were utilizing him wrong. He was playing he was just running baseline to baseline, end line to end line. But when you went to practice, and this is what I told scouts when they were going over there, I said, you need to go to practice. You need to see him in PNR sets. You need to see him when he has the ball in his hands because he's a completely different player. So I really like AJ. And then because I mean, I'm a sucker for Dylan Jones. I know that there's concerns about his body and in terms of, you know, just how athletic he is. But I saw him play so many times this year, and he is one of the smartest players, highest IQ. And he's got great size. He can slide into any position. I didn't like that in the agility testing, they basically put him with like the most athletic group. And I'm like, why would they do this? He was in with like,
just rude.
I know, with like Devin Carter and God, who else was in that group? I was just like, oh, Dylan, bless your heart. Like, just get through it. It's fine. But yeah, he's someone that like I'm more higher on than most people. And I think he's just going to be one of those like very productive role players that can come in and do a lot of things.
I should have led with this question because now we're going to have to talk another hour and a half about these two guys.
Those are two good ones. Cause we had Dylan to do a film sesh last year. I did one with him and Corey for No Ceilings. He did one this year and he was just a joy to talk to. Like, he's a film junkie. I loved his mindset, and watching him this year, I was just like, gosh, he's just so dang good. Like I'm convinced some team's going to just be like, we love him. We're going to draft him because we absolutely love him, and we'll figure out a role for him.
There was a game. So it was Northern Colorado versus Weber State. There were 30 scouts there I've never seen. And the AD there was like, there haven't been these many scouts in the building since when Dame was here. And so Northern Colorado was up 7 with a minute left. Dylan scored all 7 points, tied the game, and then had the game winner in overtime. So like when you're looking at players in his range, that late first round, mid second round, that are just pure winners and know how to win, he is that guy for sure.
I absolutely. I'm sorry. I just can't get over that you said AJ Johnson.
You can ask some questions.
I've never gotten another person to be like, you're like, I'm with you. I love AJ. I've been pumping that train all year and just
let it out. You could talk about it. We could talk about it for a while.
I did. So with AJ specifically, it's so weird because I really feel like if he would have gone to Texas this year, he would have been in conversation for, you know, top
lottery.
Lottery. What do you think his range actually is? Because all the scouts and everyone I talked to after the combine just couldn't stop praising him, and they're like, he was good, he really helped himself, I'm glad he played, he looked really good out there, he looked really comfortable. But then you go back to the NBL stuff, and like you said, he got the raw end of a deal and just was used horribly, played like 2 minutes a night. What do you think his realistic range is kind of come draft night?
I think it's gonna be anywhere, like it wouldn't surprise me if he went as high as like 22. Who is that? The Suns or 25? You know what I mean? Like 25 to 35 is kind of what I'm thinking. Well, what I'm hoping, because then I can be like, I told you so. He's not a 50. He's not in the 50s. He's not going to go in the, you know what I mean? So that's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, we're all going to be wrong, and he's going to be the freaking 12th pick and go to OKC. I don't know.
Yeah, that would probably be what Presti does. That sounds right up his alley. I love his game. Me and Metcalf has been bugging me all year. Get on the hype. It's been insufferable. Like midnight text. Like, you have to watch AJ Johnson. I'm like, okay, I'll watch him eventually. And then I watched his game, And like there was raw flashes, but when you saw the flashes, I was like, whoa, this pops as much as anyone in this class. So it's really interesting hearing what you're saying about kind of like the practices. And I think everyone always forgets how important situation and fit is with some of these guys, especially someone like AJ playing in the NBL. I think he's one of the biggest upside swings in this class.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But again, he's going to need some work in terms of adding some weight to his frame, being more physical. But every time I see him, I feel like he grows. I'm like, oh my, are you still growing? Like, he's just like this jumping string bean where, you know, I feel like he probably could still grow another half inch, an inch, and be a menace in the league with his size and what he can do with the ball in his hands.
Completely agree. And it's going to be more of a year three type thing.
Yes.
Because but that long-term thinking, it's like, that's why I keep thinking that someone is going to move into or just take him at the end of the first round to get that extra year on the contract and really invest that time. I think he's worth it. I can't wait to see kind of where he ends up going. But Kristen, you've given us a ton of time. We're just going to end up with, or round this off with just something fun. No one's going to hold you to it unless you're right. And then, you know, we'll circle back and make sure to praise you for it. But do you have like a hot take for draft night, whether it's a riser, a faller, a certain player to a team, anything?
Stephon Castle to the Spurs. And I think that they would have to move up for him.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's fun.
From four?
That's my I know. That's my hot take. Wow. I love Steph Castle. Love him.
He's my favorite player in this draft.
Yes. Like I said before, you could come on the pod anytime you want. I'm a humongous Steph Castle fan. I think I'm not surprised that he's buzzing, because I think everyone's watching now and kind of getting familiar with it. And I think everyone that week we had where everyone was really freaking out about the point guard comment, I feel like everyone's kind of moved on now and been like, oh, he's just good. So, wow, that's spicy. Okay.
It's my spicy take.
I love that. Rucker, you got anything else?
No, thank you, Kristen, for coming on. I mean, I could probably ask 500 questions, but I'm excited that we got to get you on the show. So I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you guys for having me. Anytime. I mean, we can do it all again next year. Cooper Flag and Ace Bailey. It'll be fantastic.
Absolutely. Kristen, please plug away. Tell everyone where they can find your stuff, support you. You do some of the best work in the space.
You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram at Kristen Peak, or read all my stuff on Yahoo Sports. I'll have an updated mock draft dropping Monday.
Ooh, love it.
How about that plug?
That's a good one right there.
Absolutely love it. Everyone, go support Kristen. You know she does awesome work. Thank you again for your time. Once again, I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me on Twitter at TMetcalf11. He is Tyler Rucker. You can follow him at Tyler_Rucker. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Till next time, see ya.